Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast with your host, Tom Singer. In each episode, we will explore the interesting stories of business executives, entrepreneurs, and industry leaders who are shaking things up and growing their companies. It is time to make some waves. Now here's your host, Tom Singer.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Making Waves at Sea Level. Thank you for picking this podcast. Let's face it, there's over 2 million podcasts that have been started in the last several years, and yet here you are listening to my little show. I really appreciate that. The goal of this show, for now more than 7 years and 700 episodes, is to bring you conversations about how you can shake things up, make some waves in your business, and be able to grow that business and be a better leader. And today, we're going to talk about sales with Desmond Dixon. Hey Desmond, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Now, for those of you who don't know Desmond, and you might not, he is a sales guy through and through. He is an engineer, which you think engineer, of course you're a sales guy, right? Because all engineers have a natural personality to be in sales. Well, maybe not, but he does. He's an entrepreneur. He's a real estate investor. And he got into sales because while he was in college, he had a job one summer going door to door doing sales. And he failed big time. And that sparked something inside of him that said, no, Desmond Dixon doesn't fail. He succeeds. And he wanted to go back into sales and really, really achieve. And that's what he's done. He's also the podcast host of Campfire Capitalism podcast. And when he's not living in San Diego, which, by the way, super cool city to live in. I went to college there. When he's not living in San Diego, right now he is traveling the world, investing in real estate, and living his life to the absolute fullest. And he's joining us here from Crete, Greece. Now, Desmond, we're doing this at like almost dinner time for me in Texas. It must be almost the middle of the night in Greece.
Oh yeah, it's we're touching midnight right now.
There you go. So you're getting the best of Desmond Dixon at midnight in Europe. All right, before we get started, I have to thank the first sponsor of this episode. So this episode is brought to you by Stanton Chase International, one of the leading global executive search firms serving as trusted advisors to help companies build their senior leadership team. If your company's looking to build out your senior leadership team, you got to go to executive search because you want to find the right people. You want to make sure that you're talking to Stanton Chase. And I work with Stanton Chase, so you can call me and I will connect you anywhere in the world with the best consultant to make your company get the right person on the bus and make your team thrive. All right. So Desmond, I want to talk to you a little bit about sales because that's what you do through and through. You're a sales guy. So what are your thoughts on the fastest way for a company or a team to grow their sales?
Oh, yeah, I love it, man. So by far, there's really like three things that I, from a super fundamental first principles perspective. One is we all know you can either sell to more people. That's what most people do. Like, I need more customers. Number two is I can charge more money, be more of a premium product and make more money per customer, lifetime value. Or three, you could sell more things to those existing customers because we all know, especially the people listening to this podcast, is it's a lot easier to sell to people who have already purchased something from you in the past, right? Compared to acquiring a new customer, which I believe selling more things to the same customer, solving more problems, providing more value is by far, in my opinion, the easiest way to grow faster.
All right. So let's talk about that. Let's go a little bit deeper. How do we go about doing that?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in baking in your additional services or upsells into the customer journey by knowing exactly what they need in the next step. So for example, maybe you don't need to get the entire contract in the beginning of the deal or get them to sign this big subscription at the beginning of the deal. Maybe you start off with like, hey, let's take a nibble here. Let's take a nibble there. Because you understand based upon the customer, the predicted, you know, the journey that they're going to need this tool when they get to this step. They're going to need this tool when they get to this step. So I'm a huge fan of it. I'm also a huge fan of betting on yourself. So if you're delivering, you know that you can deliver a ton of value to your customer to bake in like milestones or, you know, certain, you know, milestone metrics or bonuses to really boost it up. And software companies are really good at this and integrating this into their product. Like, for example, let's just use any email provider. It's easy to start. You pay $10 a month. You can maybe start for free. Once you reach a certain amount of contacts, you have to pay more. You pay more. If you get more and more successful, compounding and then influence and scale comes in. And now you went from paying nothing to paying $10,000 a month for, you know, HubSpot or ConvertKit or MailChimp or any of these email marketing platforms. And then you're sticky, right? Because it's hard to migrate. And then also you have the certainty because they're delivering value because they've been a part of your journey. So this could be, these principles can be, you know, used in service-based business. Like I'm a big fan, like I'm a consultant. I'm a big fan of quality over quantity. A lot of the clients I signed, the contract value was close to $1 million because I bake in milestones and have additional services. Cause I know like, hey, we're in the middle of scale. They're going to need sales guys, right? So I charge per salesperson. I know, hey, if they need some quick marketing thing, I know who to recommend. I make money there. If they hit a certain, like I know the numbers in terms of KPIs. So if I know if a client is only closing, let's say 10%, and I know they have the ability to unlock possibly up to 20 to 30%, then I'm going to reflect the contract to make it easy to start with me and I make more of my money on the back end. So I'm a huge fan of like a predictable customer journey and profiting and unlocking value from that.
But a lot of people kind of go to that first one. They think, oh, the way to raise it is just go get more customers. So why is that not as effective? Why isn't it? I mean, getting more customers seems like the natural way to go. Why do you say that's not the first way to go?
So I don't get me wrong. I'm a sales guy. I think you should always... You know, you want to get new customers, but for that to be your default, like, so if you're delivering a really good product, either your customers will want to spend more money with you, or two, they're going to share with their friends, their, you know, the referrals, social proof, right? Your retention rate should be high, and then them referring people should be high. When you get so caught up on, hey, I need to get more clients and get more clients. And if you have a leaky bucket internally, operationally, then like all you're doing is procrastinating the inevitable. Like you have to fix what's going on in-house and unlock as much value with those current customers. So you're not also coming off super desperate, right? So we are like being a sales guy, man, I've been in situations where it's like, yo, we need to close X percent this month. And by the way, I need a little bit more because we lost some customers. Because we have to show the board that we're growing at X amount because that's what we promised the board, right? So it puts a lot of pressure on your sales team. And then they're all at the same time, certainty is everything on the sales team. So they're like, wow, like, am I really selling something that's valuable to other people if the people that I'm enrolling aren't staying around? So it's like a psychological and culture hindrance as well. So there's so many different things when you focus so much on, I need to get new people in. It needs to be a balance of how can I unlock the most value of my current customer base? How can I sell a really great a culture within the sales team and certainty and then lead from that place to get more clients? Because then you're going with house money. Like, you know, our clients stay with, you could say with pride, our clients stay with us for 2 years, right? Or 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the, you know, the usual lifetime value for your product or service.
Nice. So let's talk about what do you do when you're failing in sales, right? What do you do in that spot? I said in your introduction that you got into sales and poof, didn't go so well. What does a salesperson do? I mean, it's really easy to say, oh, get more customers. Oh, sell them more things. But what do you do when it's not going well, both as the individual salesperson and the company?
I truly believe in sales failure. It's like, it's the only true way to like grow massively, right? Because if everything's going right, you're really not learning because, you know, you ego, right? Like, oh man, I'm the hot stuff. And when you get smacked in the mouth and put in your place, like, you know, like, hey, like it creates great contrast and it creates great learning experiences. It humbles you. And then it feeds that flame, right? Like, you know, like, wow, this isn't that bad. Like when I got first fired from my first sales job, I was like, wow, like I'm down and out. Like I'm stuck in Texas. I have no money. I have to go live with my uncle for the rest of the summer in Dallas. And I contemplated the rest of that summer. I was like, man, this isn't as bad as I thought it was. And it made me want it even more because I was like, man, what am I missing? What skills do I need to grow? And it helped me get laser focused on, okay, I just need to focus more on other people, not on my own wallet, right? Because when you're selling, when you first start selling, you're like, I need to make this money. I want to, you compare yourself to other people. And then when you fail, you get really like singled in on like, okay, what was the biggest fundamental thing that I can fix right now to turn the odds into my favor? So I think failure is critical in sales. And the if you're not failing, you're not trying. That was like some of the best advice I've ever got in my life from my first sales manager.
Yeah, but I want to go deeper in this because it's easy to say, oh, if you're not failing, you're not succeeding in sales. I mean, that's a nice little buzzword. But we all know that a lot of people don't go into sales because they're scared of the failure. And a lot of people wash out fast because when they get fired or, you know, they don't make quota or whatever, they go like, oh, I'm feeling so bad. And they go and, you know, get an accounting job or something. So let's talk more about why failure is important and how do we deal with failure?
Yeah. So I think obviously awareness, I go through my own mental modeling. So awareness is first, right? And then you got to ask yourself, okay, what is your why? Right. I mean, are we getting back to Simon Sinek, but like, why did you even get into sales in the first place? Did you get into it because you want to have the fast car and all the things, or did you get into it because you wanted the freedom, you wanted to, you know, solve people's problems? Like, you got to figure out like why you're in that position, because sales is a lonely world, man. Like, if you're an outside sales guy, like if you're a BDR, like sales is not an easy job. It's very lonely. And so you got to have something deep in your core that drives you to keep getting up, because being smacked down is like a part of the job. Being told no is a part of the job, right? Being sometimes fired is a part of the job, right? It happens. Like, you could be on fire, but if the company implodes, like you get laid off, like you got to get back on the horse and rebuild again. So it's all about like, what is your why? And then like, once you get started in sales, like after you get there that first, as you may know, the first couple of years, it gets so much easier because you have network power, you have experience, like you understand. Like, it's like you know what to expect, right? So you have that experience on your side.
So how do you keep good morale when you're in sales, when you're getting beat down once in a while?
That's a good question. Personally, I believe like talking with other people in your, like, who do what you do, who can understand, like in your like sales team culture is super, super important at this point. Cause the best, even the best scores go on shooting slumps, right? I can remember months, like I was like the number one guy. Like I can remember months was like, man, I didn't really do so hot this month. But me talking it out with my colleagues over beer, right? And like it like that camaraderie, that culture. So like feeding off the culture, the leadership is super important. The company's a vision is super important for sales because they feed off the certainty of the company, right? So that's how I usually, you know, we work with guys to kind of get them out of a slump is getting tapped back into the company culture and in the environment.
So let's talk about what you do when you work with people. When you're consulting with a company and their sales team, you know, how do you start? How do you find out what the problems are? And then what do you do? What do you provide for these companies that you work with?
Love it. So I start with one, the customer, because the customer is the North Star. So I want to know everything about the customer psychology, right? So why do they buy? Like, how do they even describe their problem? Not how you describe their problem, but how do they describe it through emails? If you have recordings, right? I want to see the feedback. So after they're done with you, because I think fulfillment needs to match your sales, right? You don't want to sell something and then deliver something else. So I want to see, okay, what do they say after fulfillment? What do they say they like the most? And then after I understand the customer profile, I like to then go, okay, what's the offer look like, right? The product and the offer are two different things. People can confuse it. Like, you can have the best product, but if you don't know how to offer that thing, you could be leaving tons of money on the table. You could be missing clients through the leaky bucket, right? Like the offer is so important. So then I like to unpack the offer. Okay, what is the key value proposition? What's the key offer? And then after I get an idea of the offer, I like, this is kind of like my assessment. Then I kind of go through the sales team. Okay, like, what's the numbers? Now we're looking at numbers, right? Now I understand the emotional side of everything in the sales angle. Now I'm looking at the numbers. Okay, what is your KPIs? How many calls are being booked? How many discovery calls are showing up? What's your close rate? And like mapping out their own customer journey. Is it a 3-month customer journey? Is it a 2-month, or is it 2 days, right? Is it a quick sales process? Like, they just jumping on a demo call before they purchase a software package, right? So it's just mapping out the things, looking at the numbers, and then comparing those numbers based upon those sales guys. And then obviously talking with the leadership team to understand the goals. And so then I can like draw out a, like, then I can, okay, now I can come up with a plan of, okay, this is where we are. This is where we're trying to, here's where we're trying to go. What's the path of least resistance? What's the low hanging fruit? Or is there a leaky bucket in the follow-up system? Are we leaving money on the table with possible upsells? Like just kind of going through that. That's kind of how I like to go through my process.
So not every executive team has real good sales experience. The best CEOs I ever worked for were ones who had grown up in the sales side of the company because they fully understood that at the end of the day, without sales, we don't have a company. I worked for a company one time where you'd had to call, this is pre-internet, you had to call your numbers into the CFO every Friday. And the receptionist would answer the phone and she would always say to the salespeople who called, by the way, thank you for what you do. And one time I asked her, why do you say that to me every week? And she said, I love this company. I've worked here for 10 years. And she was the office manager slash receptionist. And she said, if the salespeople aren't successful, the company won't be successful and I won't have a job. And I always thought that was really interesting that the receptionist was thanking the salespeople for doing their job so she could have her career. But then I realized that the CEO, who she reported to as sort of the office manager and all that, the CEO was an old sales guy himself, and that was the way he looked at the company. So I think the best companies have a management structure where they champion the sales team. But there are people listening to this right now, either on the C-level who are like, what, the salespeople, they're a necessary evil. Or there are salespeople listening to this show who are like, he's right. My boss has no idea what I do every day. So what do you do when you encounter a company where the executive team is not necessarily grasping why sales is so awesome to the success of the company?
that's so funny. I would just start asking questions, man. Like I being a sales guy, I just can't conceive if you're in a growth environment, if you're trying to grow a company, like sales is very, to me, like I hate to say more important, like every operation is important, customer success is important. But in terms of growth, I think sales is very critical. And anything can happen with your current customer base. Like anything can happen operation. Anything, like if you can start over, like you won't have a sales team. So I would just ask some questions, man, and just kind of get clear and then just relate it back to their goals, right? Like why sales is important, right? Like having a strong sales culture. Like I think that's super important, especially from the C-suite. Like you want to make sure that your people have your back, right? So if they're already like saying that, then that means they're probably culturally like, There's definitely some potentially culturally, and that can boost the productivity of your sales team. If you care about your company, then you should care about everyone in your company. Everyone's job is important, especially I think sales is critical, man. So I would be a little concerned when I hear a C-suite person not value sales, right? Because I don't think we'll align belief system wise. So that makes sense.
You sound shocked, and yet I run into it all the time where the C-suite people are like, "Nah, you know, yeah, we have to have sales," but they don't. They came out of accounting, and it's like they don't understand that sales is that lifeblood to everything. It just sort of happens, and then salespeople are expensive, and they whine a lot, and they're a pain in the ass. And I've encountered a lot of C-suite people who that's how they see their sales team.
Usually operations, usually there's a grift between ops and sales. Seems to be like a common thing within organizations. But marketing people, like, you know, usually CEOs that I've spoken with, like, you know, they want the best salespeople because it's like it grows the company. But usually operations, they tend not to like each other because they're like, oh, sales guys are always selling stuff that we have to fulfill on, and you know, the back and forth between like account managers could be pretty.
I can tell you stories of when I was in sales, when I ran into those types of problems with people on operations or whatever, who were like, why did you sell that big contract? Now we have to work. So I've got a couple more questions for you, Desmond, but first I have to thank the other sponsor of this episode. So this episode, like all of them, is brought to you by Podfly Productions. Podfly takes the time and the headache out of creating your own podcast. They set you up with the right equipment, training, and guidance to ensure you're going to sound amazing. Podfly does all the heavy lifting and that pesky technical work so that you can focus on growing your audience, creating great content, and interviewing people who are making waves in business like Desmond Dixon. Hey, if you want to start a podcast, and I know that some of you do, jump over to podfly.net slash cool things and check out the offer that they have for the listeners of this show. All right, so Desmond, you said something when you were talking before that I want to go deeper on, and that was you were talking about how do you frame the offer that you're making to clients? And when you said that, then you moved on. I'm like, wait, how do you frame the offer? So what is it that you're teaching your clients? How does a salesperson effectively frame the offer so that he's not leaving money on the table? Because I hate to leave money on the table.
Yeah, we're all capitalists here, right? So I'm a huge fan. Oh, dude, I love this so much. I'm a huge fan of the client asking me for the order, right? So posturing is super important in leverage, especially in negotiations. And also, I'm going to talk on that point, and then I'm going to go deeper on what's called Melton modeling, right? It's an NLP text. I'm certified NLP. And it's about like staying really high level and then allowing the customer to ask specific questions that matter to them, right? Because we can go into features and benefits and go through your pitch. I hate pitching. Like I am the anti-pitching sales guy. I got a huge, I hate it. I think that 60% of the time, the customer should be talking. Even in a demo, they should be talking, right? And 40% of the time, you're spending your 40% asking questions and 20% problem solving. That's how you close 50%, man. Like that's the secret. You shut up, you let them talk, you ask questions, follow-up questions, repeat back what they say, match a mirror. And then once you get to the offer point, you're going to reach a point. So if you're doing this right, asking questions and answer your questions and they're like, man, I love the rapport because you're repeating back what they say. They're going to ask you the money. This is my favorite thing. This is my favorite thing to hear. Where do we go from here? Music to my ears. And then you go high level Milton model. Okay, we can go this way or this way. Binary options. Which way sounds better for you? Give them the option to choose. Oh, I like B better. Okay, great. So B looks like this. 1, 2, 3. Oh, that's interesting. So then we're getting into buying qualifying. Usually at this point, they'll do a buying qualifying question. Okay. What does that look like? Right. Like logistical question. Okay. So do you guys cover this? Like when is this going to be covered or when is this going to be delivered? So now it's your sale to lose. Right. So now you're going through their buying qualifying questions. And then you get to the point of like, is there anything else that, anything else is more important? So now you're always asking questions because you want to elicit out like what's going on in their head and not assume that you know what's going on upstairs, right? So it's like they're selling themselves. I've seen it happen hundreds of times, man. I've done it hundreds of times. And usually when you get down to the money part, if you've answered the questions throughout, like if you went through the discovery process and qualified them properly, you'll know they have the money. You know that they're the authority person on the phone. And you know that this is something that's urgent for them in terms of time, like, because usually create the time contrast of, okay, what have you tried? What is your plans in the future? What is your timeline now? Like, you should have the time thing buttoned down. And then you just give them the price. Dude, I've done this so many times that most every time, at 80% of the objections I get are always stalling objections. Okay, I need to think about it. And then at that point, you just keep them on the phone, right? I mean, or you keep the conversation alive. You don't let it die, right? So, I mean, it's kind of how I frame my offers, man. I mean, it's fun, man. Like you just allow people to sell themselves. It's the most bizarre thing in the world to watch.
All right. So last question, what does every salesperson need to know that we haven't yet covered?
Empathy, man. Huge empathy. The more you can empathize with your client, the deeper that rapport is going to go or prospect, the deeper rapport is going to go. And they can feel that. So these are things that a script can't fix. Like this is like how you say things, your body language, like your email communication. Like when you empathize and connect deeply with that person, they'll feel that. And then they're more receptive to, continue to give you time and energy and more likely to buy from you. So empathy, I think that's huge.
Awesome. So Desmond Dixon, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they find you?
LinkedIn. That's my playground. Mm-hmm. You can find me on LinkedIn, Desmond Dixon. Or you can come check out our pod if you want, campfirecapitalism.com. You go to cxorepublic.com, but you can most likely find me on LinkedIn. Just reach out and I'll love to chat and be of service to any of you out there.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your travels around the world. We look forward to you getting back to the States and being there in San Diego. Could be worse places to live. In the meantime, thank you for being a guest here. And thank you to everybody who tuned in and listened. I say it every episode. If it wasn't for the audience, why would we do this podcast? Well, we wouldn't. And so make sure you do me a favor. Tell your friends. Number one way people discover my podcast, or any of the other podcasts that I host is that always they say, found it through word of mouth, which means I need your mouth to go out and tell somebody. Go tell your mom, your sister, your brother, anybody who likes business and growth and entrepreneurship, tell them that they need to be checking out Making Waves at Sea Level. It's available on Apple, on Stitcher, on Spotify, heck, everywhere you get your podcast joy. All right, in the meantime, go out there, flex your business muscles, make sure that your career ladder is against the right wall, because you don't want to climb that career ladder, get to the top and find out, oh God, I'm in the wrong place. Because I know, I did that for a while. And then the flip side is, while you're doing all this stuff in business, make sure you're enjoying it. Have some fun. Go out there and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast. Without your listening to these in-depth conversations, there would be no show. Connect with Tom at tomsinger.com and follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Singer.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.